Hey everybody, this is DJ Q for the Golf News Met Radio Network. We now return you to Jay's Place, already in progress.
Alright, thank you DJ Q, the best producer in the business, bringing us back in style. I am Jay Flemma of CyberGolf and the Golf News Net Radio Network, and you are listening to Jay's Place. Hey everybody, glad to have you back. It's been a great show so far. Thank you to all of our guests talking U.S. Open and post-U.S. Open. We're going to shift gears a little bit. We are now finally getting towards our British Open push. And, you know, guys, can you believe it? We were all set up for the big match of the decade. It was going to be so perfect. The American star on the rise, Jordan Spieth, winning two major championships in a row at the Masters and the British Open, Masters and the U.S. Open, headed to the British Open to be the first person since Ben Hogan to win all three. And what happens? Rory McIlroy, his European foil, winner of the two majors before, goes and hurts his ankle in a soccer kickabout. Balloon meet Tim. Well, here to talk a little bit about various sports injuries, and in particular about Rory. We finally have him on, everybody. We've been talking about doing this and doing this and doing this, but we have gotten around to it. He's here. He's my sports doctor, but he's also been the sports doctor to the L.A. Clippers, the L.A. Kings, the L.A. Lakers, UCLA, USC, and a host of other squads while he was out at the famous Kobe Medical School in L.A., and he's now with Hamilton Orthopedics. Give a warm welcome to Dr. Russell France, a.k.a. Doogie the Doc. Welcome back, Doctor. Good to have you on the show.
Hi, Jay. Great. Thanks. Good to be here.
So, you know, of all the times to have you on, we're all a little bit morbid about this. We had a great, great matchup set up, a showdown between Europe's great star and America's great star with so much, you know, on the table, ready for everybody to just check out this great battle between the two of them at St. Andrews, the home of golf. And Rory goes, and let's get this exactly right, totally ruptures his left ATFL and associated joint capsule damage. So translate that for those of us that are medically impaired here. How bad is this injury?
Well, your ATFL is the anterior talofibular ligament, and it's on the outside part of your ankle. It's the most common injured ligament in ankle sprains, and when they say he has a complete rupture, what we would say is you have a grade 3 ankle sprain. Ankle sprains can be just mild injuries that every weekend warrior gets, playing basketball in the gym with her buddies or out playing pickup football on Thanksgiving weekend. And when he has a complete rupture, he's completely torn that, and that's as bad of an ankle sprain as you can get. He also sounds like he's injured some of the capsule, the joint lining that's on the outside part of the ankle. You've all seen the picture of him in the boot on the crutches. When you have this type of injury, your ankle's going to get very swollen. Very painful. He's going to have very limited motion. Going to be tough for him to turn and pivot on that in his golf swing. So, you know, right now he's going to be focusing on controlling that swelling, controlling the pain, trying to get his motion back and seeing how ready he can get for the British in a week.
Well, you know, it would be 1 week from tomorrow that he would possibly be teeing off. They gave themselves, this is Rory and his team, a 10% chance of starting. So when you roll your ankle on the outside that badly, you know, what do you think the chances are that someone can come back and play competitive golf, you know, even reasonably well in just in 7 days after an injury like that?
I think their 10% chance, I think they probably hit that right on the money. Only Rory and his camp really know how bad this is and how bad what they're thinking his likelihood is. But if you truly have a grade 3 injury and a bad injury to the outside of the ankle, it can take up to 2 to 3 weeks to be able to get the function that he's going to need as a professional athlete to compete on that ankle. So I think 10% is probably pretty accurate.
What's going to be the medical care that he's going to be getting going forward? What exactly is he going to have to do? Is this a rice compression? ice and elevation kind of thing? Is this going to be the kind of thing that doesn't work, you just have to grin and bear it? You know, what's the best way to treat this?
Well, at first you're going to see him doing just what he's doing in that picture that he has up on social media. He's going to immobilize it and try to get things under control, try to get the swelling down. He'll be wrapping his ankle. He'll be icing it. He'll be taking anti-inflammatories like ibuprofen or Aleve to try to control some of that pain and swelling. In addition to that, he'll start his motion exercises, try to get his motion back to as normal as possible, try to get up 60 to 70% of what his other ankle is. When he gets there, he'll have to try to start doing some strengthening exercises. Those ligaments, when you tear the ligaments on the outside of your ankle, they never completely heal normally back to where they were before you injured them. So he's going to need to help strengthen those muscles around the ankle with TheraBands and the big rubber bands you see people using in therapy to try to make up for some of the laxity that's going to be there. Once he gets his motion, he'll start strengthening, and then he'll have to try to make a game time decision next week.
Now, how is this different from the famous injury that the great Boston Red Sox pitcher Curt Schilling had when he was playing in the 2004 World Series? Because it seemed like he damaged the outside of his ankle as well, although in his case it was his right ankle, his push-off ankle.
Yeah, the difference is really going to be in the severity of the injury, how much damage is there to the ligaments and the surrounding joint capsule. How much swelling do they have with that injury? With a grade 3 injury, Rory's in tough shape. He's going to, you know, get a big goose egg, big baseball-sized bump there, swelling on the outside of his ankle. He's going to have a hard time weight-bearing on it. He'll have a hard time rotating on that with his golf swing. The difference really is in the severity of the injury, how bad those ligaments are injured.
Now, when Schilling was hurt, there was a controversial procedure that was done that was wildly successful, actually, where they sutured the loose ligament in place. And, you know, that was what became ultimately the famous bloody sock, because he would bleed through it while he was pitching. Is there any sort of possible emergency surgery that they might be able to do, or some sort of unusual treatment, but something radical but would be effective, that Rory might be able to start in a week?
Any surgery would put Rory out for a lot longer than a week. He would need to take at least a week of immobilization to allow his wound to heal, and then he'd have several months of rehab allowing those ligaments to heal in. The surgery would tighten his ligaments and put him back in the proper position, but his body and his natural ability to heal that would still have to take time, take several months, and then to rehab, get his motion back. So any surgery to get him back for the British Open would be out. But there are some studies, I participated in one of these in some of my training, where you can inject what's called platelet-rich plasma. You draw the patient's own blood, so Rory would have a blood draw, just like you were going to the lab to get your blood checked. And then you can spin that down, and you can separate the parts of the blood. And what we're interested in is the platelet-rich plasma portion, or the PRP, which has platelets in it. And those platelets are thought to have growth factors that can enhance the healing process. So those can be injected into the area. And there's some data that can get an athlete back to participation in high level athletics quicker. Although we don't have great data, there is some that shows you can get back about twice as fast. And the study that was done showed from about 2 to 3 weeks down to about 1 to 1.5 weeks to get someone back. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's having something like this done.
Well, then, it's interesting that you bring that up, because Tiger Woods, when he won the 2008 U.S. Open, apparently was undergoing some sort of blood spinning or blood platelet transfer, as you just explained.
Right, yeah. This is really popular among professional athletes. These guys are trying to do everything they can to keep their bodies healthy. They have so many overuse injuries after what they put themselves through. Of course, you know, there's some athletes who have gone overseas. You hear people going to Germany to get different injections, stem cell injections and so forth. You know, the problem with that is we really don't know what's being injected. That sort of data is not published. There's not a whole lot like that available in the U.S., although there is more and more becoming available. But, you know, the most common procedure like that that's done in the U.S. is PRP, where you're spinning your own blood down and injecting the platelet-rich plasma portion back into the injured body area.
Yeah, and you're right when you mentioned that it's still got some question marks all over it. In particular, some doctors, like the infamous Anthony Galea up in Canada, have been doing the PRP and the blood spinning, but they've also been putting in at least steroids or PEDs that are outlawed by a lot of sports agencies and by various sports leagues, and that's what got A-Rod into trouble, for example.
Yeah, that's right. You know, that's the problem when you're going overseas and it's not regulated. You don't know exactly what you're getting. You know, whether or not the athlete does is another story, another conversation. But certainly here, you know, we're more regulated. And, you know, they have a harder time sneaking those substances in.
Now, the interesting thing about all this is that the PGA Championship is coming up 3 weeks after the Open Championship. So even if Rory misses his chance to play at St. Andrews, he still might be able to play at Whistling Straits in Wisconsin. So with 3 or 4 weeks of, you know, treatment and healing, what kind of percentages might he be looking at to start in that tournament?
Yeah, I think I would find it hard to believe that he would miss that tournament in another month from this injury, although certainly possible. You know, I think 90-95% chance he'll be playing there. These guys have so many options available to them for rehab. They're getting the top of the line medical care. They're focused on recovery from this injury all day long. You know, when you and I go to work, we might get an ankle sprain and we might have 20 minutes at night to rest it and do our exercises. These guys have 24 hours a day with trainers and everybody else there keeping on them, helping them do these things and recover from this. So a month out, he should be fine to play at Whistling Straits.
Now, will it make any difference that Whistling Straits, very similar to Chambers Bay, is a rather hilly up and down golf course and is probably going to put a lot more stress on those ankles? He's just clambering up and down hills all day.
It's certainly not going to help him. I'd be more than climbing up and down the hills, I'd be worried about his stance. If he's on an uneven line, that's when the stability of his ankle is really going to need to take over. He's going to need those ligaments to be good and firm to help hold him steady throughout a swing when he's in those awkward stances.
Now, one of the other things that you have to worry about, and it's rather disquieting, is the athletes that have, you know, this urge to come back and come back and come back and do it too quickly. A number of people, myself included, think that Tiger Woods has come back from several of his injuries far too early and may have made things worse over time. With this kind of injury, you know, what is the possibility that this could be some sort of permanent degenerative thing that's going to get worse and worse over time? And what are the chances that if he comes back too early, he could hurt it even worse?
Well, certainly this is an injury that never totally heals. We'll never totally get the stability back in that ankle that he had beforehand. So in that sense, he's always going to be more prone to have additional ankle sprains and to repeat the same injury. Now, golfing per se is an unlikely sport to sprain your ankle in, although anything's possible. He's really going to be relying more on the stability throughout a swing. So he's not going to have a repeat injury per se from golf, but he may have some lingering side effects, some lingering swelling, some lingering pain on the outside of the ankle, and that would be fairly common after this type of injury. You see pro athletes or even high-level college athletes wearing braces. That may be something he plays with to see if he can wear a brace around the ankle or tape his ankle to help get back for the British in a week. But I think long-term he should be okay, but he is certainly a higher risk to have repeat injuries and some lingering side effects from this.
Everybody, we're talking with Doogie the Doc, Dr. Russell LaFrance of Hamilton Orthopedic in upstate New York, one of the great sports doctors in the country, a young rising star, hence the name Doogie the Doc. Guys, you know, we've talked about it before on the show. We're finally glad to have him on. And, you know, it's astonishing that a guy so young, who looks even younger, has accomplished so much. Tell us all a little bit about your med school days and your time out in L.A. working with, you know, orthopedic injuries and various sports teams so that we can have a bit of a frame of reference.
Well, I went to medical school in Buffalo, and then I did my orthopedic residency in Rochester and spent 5 years there before heading out west to L.A., which was one of the greatest years of my training, just a fantastic year living out on the West Coast in California. Then we had the opportunity to work with not only some of the best sports doctors in the country and learn from them, but also to work with all the pro sports teams. As you mentioned earlier, we're the Kings and the Ducks and the Dodgers and the Lakers, to be involved with those organizations and to work with the guys who cover them year after year after year was just fantastic. To meet some of those athletes and to help take care of them was just a fantastic year and a great learning experience. Now we're back in upstate New York in Hamilton, and it's been a fantastic experience as well.
Now, medically speaking, what were the most interesting sports injuries and the toughest problems that you had to solve while you were out there in L.A.? Was there anything of particular medical interest, and was there anything that was right on the cutting edge that you did or worked on that the listeners might find particularly interesting?
Well, I was at Carolyn Job, and that is where the Tommy John procedure was invented by Dr. Job. When he first did it on Tommy John, and you know, so we were one of the leading orthopedic institutes or clinics that do the reconstruction of the ulnar collateral ligament, and so we had a very high volume of that, which was great. You don't see that at very many other institutions throughout the country, so that was probably the most exciting reason to be out there to see that done by the best surgeons in the country, who do that on professional pitchers day after day after day.
So tell everybody, break it down in layman's terms, exactly what the Tommy John injury is and Tommy John surgery, how it fixes it. Tommy John, of course, being the great pitcher for the Dodgers and the Yankees back in the 70s.
It starts with an injury to the ligament on the inside of the elbow. When you have a pitcher who throws that hard, day after day after day, for years, they start to stretch the ligament out, their ulnar collateral ligament that's on the very inside of their elbow, and that can become ruptured acutely with one pitch, or it can become attenuated or loose from the chronic stress that they put on it by pitching. And when they have an injury that they can't pitch with, they start to lose velocity and they start to lose control. They have pain while they're pitching, pain for a day or two afterwards right there on the inside of their elbow. And if we can't get them back to pitching through rehab, then we have to reconstruct it or replace that ligament. There's two options. You need to take a tendon from somewhere else. You could take one out of the wrist or a hamstring tendon from the knee. And then surgically, you have an incision on the inside half of the elbow. We drill tunnels into the bone on each side, able to weave that ligament through. And then, you know, the bad part about that surgery is it's a year rehab. You see these guys even today, way back when Dr. Joe first did this on Tommy John, and when they're doing it today, it's a year rehab before they can come back and pitch competitively again.
Now, you know, it's interesting that you should bring up that whole bit about having to reconstruct it and take ligaments from somewhere else, because they're going to be opening me up in November and working, taking things from other places and putting them in my shoulder. So it's funny, you know, everywhere I go playing golf now, you know, it's pretty well known that I've got a completely shorn off rotator cuff in my right shoulder, which is now grinding bone on bone. But, you know, I've decided I am going to do this in November. I just want to wait for golf season to end. So there's a lot of people, though, that are in the same boat as me that have all had rotator cuff problems, and pretty much what I'm hearing from everybody is, you know, have the surgery done, have it repaired and fixed. You know, you'll thank yourself later. And I'm looking forward to it, too, because I want to get back to being 100%. So very quickly, talk to us a little bit about rotator cuff injuries and, you know, number one, why it doesn't affect the golf swing as much as it does, say, a pushing or pulling or lifting motion, and, you know, what the procedure involves.
Well, rotator cuff injuries are another common injury in the shoulder, not just in golf, but throughout all activities, just overuse type injury that we see, you know, and it can, we can see it with golf as you start to stress the rotator cuff a little bit. When you have a tear, rotator cuff tears don't heal themselves, so they need to be surgically repaired. We go in arthroscopically through three or four little holes, able to grab onto that torn piece of rotator cuff that's retracted back away from the bone where it's supposed to be attached, and we put plastic or biodegradable or bioabsorbable anchors into the bone that have suture attached to them, and we use that suture to sew the rotator cuff back down. How much a rotator cuff bothers one person is always different than how much it bothers another person. Luckily, in the golf swing, we're not having our arms extended out in front of us. You try to keep your elbows in close to your body, and that can help make up for a little bit of the function of the rotator cuff. But if you have your arm out away from you, you really need that function of the rotator cuff to pull your humeral head or the head of the ball and socket joint in your shoulder back into the shoulder to keep it stable while you're moving your arm out in front of you in a space you're reaching to pick up a glass of milk or something like that. Is really where we see the trouble with the rotator cuff. It's with these small motions trying to lift something extended away from you where you see the most difficulty with the torn rotator cuff.
Yeah, you know, one of the ladies that I play golf with says to me, Jay, it hurts me more to lift a beer than it does for me to swing a golf club.
That's right. Both equally important, though.
Yeah, it's funny that I injured the rotator cuff running, actually. I was finishing up a 5K in New York City, and it was a little dipsy-doodle right before the finish line, and I missed the step and landed right on the point of it, and there was a terrible ripping sound, and a lightning bolt down my arm, and my left arm just went completely dead. It was a shocking sort of thing that I'm going to do to myself again this weekend because I'm running in the Boilermaker, you know, a glutton for punishment. So, it's going to be very hot. It's going to be very humid. It's 15K, 9.3 miles for those of you scoring at home, with 14,000 runners. And I know that we have a lot of runners that listen to the show. In fact, a big shout out to everybody who's going to be running the race, especially the Go the Distance crowd, all of the newbies running their first race, and to the Mohawk Valley Hills Riders who have been teaching all of the newbies, you know, how to race, how to prepare, and doing a whole training regimen for several months now. So tell everybody a little bit, if you're going to go race, if you're going to go run in the Boilermaker or in a competitive race like that, what's the best way to hydrate and what are the best exercises to do so that you're loose, limber, and ready to go?
Well, one of the most important parts about running a race like the Boilermaker is really preparing year-round or several months in advance. Of course, if you haven't done that and you're signed up, you know, it's a little too late. So important things at this point are really, like you mentioned, really we want you to stay hydrated. We want everyone to be safe. Lots of water throughout the race. You know, luckily, throughout the Boilermaker, there's areas to get drinks. But on a hot day, you really want to stay well hydrated. You want to hydrate before you run, but you want to make sure you're hydrating throughout your run as well, whether it's with water, Gatorade, probably doesn't make a big difference. The Gatorade, Powerade type drinks will help get some of those electrolytes back into your system a little bit quicker than water. But you want to make sure you really stay hydrated, not just before the race, but you're drinking throughout the race as well. And then hydrate before you hit the Saranac Brewery afterwards.
Everyone's going to be hydrating severely when they get to the Saranac Brewery. That's one of the popular things about this race. It ends at the brewery, and everybody's ready to drink at 9:30 in the morning. It's a party in the North Country. Now, what about these running gels and running goos and running gummy thingies? You know, you see all these people standing on the side, they're offering the water, but they're also offering these plastic packets with superior energy, maximum recovery, lemon lime flavor, performance goo, or energy gel. You know, explain to us how, you know, something like that you just ingest as you're running 20 minutes later is going to give you energy, or is it even going to be 5 minutes later that's going to give you the energy?
Well, these are all based on the same principle that Gatorade and Powerade are based on, that they have a high sugar content, and that sugar helps your body run some of the electrolyte pumps, per se, that pump the sodium and the potassium that are also in with those into your system. So they're not looking for complex carbohydrates. At that point, you're looking for something that your body can use immediately, and that's the simple sugars. And the electrolytes need to get back in there that you're losing with the sweat on these hot days throughout this 9 miles that will get back in there and that you need to keep the energy up. So you get the two things you really need with these, whether you're drinking it in Gatorade or you're taking it in these gel packets that you see on the side of the rake. You need the glucose and you need the electrolytes. Those, you know, why people are going to that, I'm not sure. Maybe just a little bit easier to get down as you're running as opposed to spilling the water all over yourself.
Or carrying a bottle. The only problem with these goo packets is it is the stickiest, most viscous thing I have ever seen, okay? And it gets on everything. You put one of those in your pocket and you're sticking to yourself, your seat, you're sticking to you, it's sticking to the person next to you. It's crazy trying to get it off of everything. So that's the one drawback to the goose. You better have a garbage can and a place to wash your hands.
That's right. So be careful when you're eating those and running.
Now, I'm going to make a point of having a good pasta dinner before I race, but not too much bread because I got to cut the white bread out. I remember Dr. Fung's advice to me. He said to me, you know what your problem is, Flemma? Too much red meat and white bread and too many double tequilas. So I looked back and I said, well, I should cut out the white bread, sir. So it's interesting to see, by the way, there actually are stations around the Boilermaker where people are offering people shots, okay? There, one year, there was a table full of, I forget whether it was blackberry brandy or fire whiskey or that cinnamon ball or whatever it was called. But, you know, I'm coming in to, you know, grab a water and all of a sudden, shot, 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 drink, drink, drink. And I'm looking at them like, you guys crazy? But they really love this race, though. The whole town gets around it. You have seen a Boilermaker, I presume, right?
Yeah, you know, it's an incredible, incredible race, and it's not just the Utica area. They draw people in from all around the state, but even around the country to race in this. It's a big deal, and they do a great job putting it on. You know, they make a big deal about it. It's great for the community, brings the community together, it brings money into the community. It's just a fantastic event.
Will you be home in time to watch it?
I won't. You know, unfortunately, I'll be at a conference in Florida at the end of the week, so I'm going to miss it again this year. But I have a few friends running in it, so, you know, wishing them all the best.
Yeah, it is a terrific spectacle, especially when the Kenyans go running by, you know, setting their 42-minute times, you know, and breaking records in the event. It's astonishing. They come from all countries around the world, you know, famous runners that will be competing in Olympics and in world championships, you know, and then the others of the 14,000 that make it so much fun. Although everybody says it's going to be very crowded, you know, it'll be the most crowded run that I've ever run, far more than any of the half marathons that I've done. You know, with so many people lined up in so small a space. But everybody does get behind it. And I remember when I was standing on the 8th tee at Valley View Golf Course a couple of years ago watching the ticker tape of runners, you know, wind around me on the road while I'm standing on the tee box, you know, slowly encircling me. And the other thing I remember about it is two absolutely god-awful, they called themselves rock bands, one over on the third tee, you know, playing some head-banging nonsense that nobody could decipher. And then over on the 16th green, you had some guy pretending to be R. Kelly or some R&B guy, you know, crooning away and wailing away in a volume that was more like a devastating thunderstorm ripping apart towns in Kansas. So it definitely has an ethos all its own. So.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, it was great having you on the show.
Well, it was great to get on finally. We've been talking about it for a while, so great to be on, and thanks for having me.
Well, we're going to check in with you from time to time when there is big news in the sports injury world, and in particular in golf. So thanks so much for your insights, everybody. Big hand for Dr. Russell of France, DoogieTheDoc, coming on the show. I am Jay Plum of CyberGolf and the Golf News Net Radio Network. Jay's Plays will be right back with our next guest. Right now we're going to leave you in the very capable hands of DJ Q. See you in a few minutes, everybody.
That bump music means we're going to have to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be back at the second half of the show in just a minute.
This is your main man, DJ Q, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network.